Maximus B. Good morning, is Mr. Hanna?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Hanna, and I'm a deputy county attorney from Douglas County, representing the state in today's matter. Today, I'm asking this court to find that the separate juvenile court erred for two separate reasons. First, it erred when it ordered that the adjudication order from January 25th, 2018 to be vacated, and second, when it, in the order of vacation, it stated that juveniles cannot plead no contest. Today, the state's asking this court to find that the order on March 27, 2018 be void, and because of such, should be vacated, and this court should remand these proceedings back to the juvenile court for further disposition.
What's the basis for our jurisdiction in this matter?
Your Honor, the basis for this jurisdiction is the fact that the Supreme Court has stated on multiple occasions, specifically in In re Trey H, that the appellate courts have the power to determine whether or not they have jurisdiction to hear an appeal. Specifically, if the lower court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction to do what it did and there's a void order, the appellate court doesn't have jurisdiction. Incident to that power, the appellate court has the power and duty to void such orders and to remand the case down for further proceedings.
Your position is that any time a trial court takes an action without jurisdiction, you can come to an appellate court and ask that that be voided?
If the trial court did so without subject matter jurisdiction, then yes. Now, if you look at the Supreme Court case In re Trey H, it talked about subject matter jurisdiction, not just the fact that a court has the ability to hear a certain type of case, but rather subject matter jurisdiction about a particular question asked of the trial court or specific relief sought. Now, in In re Trey H, it was a juvenile court hearing a juvenile court matter in which a juvenile was placed at YRTC in Kearney. And at that time, there was a statute that did not allow juvenile court to have review hearings. And the juvenile court, despite that statute, went above the authority of that statute and still conducted those hearings. Now, this court stated because the juvenile court went beyond that authority, that gave appellate court jurisdiction because the juvenile court lacked subject matter jurisdiction. And in that case, the Supreme Court voided those orders ordering review hearings and vacated such orders.
Counsel, I think perhaps where Justice Papik may have been headed with this is, but for what you claim to be the voidness or that the order was void, would it have been a final order? And I think the question would be not just any order, if the court makes some sort of clearly interlocutory order that for some reason is beyond its subject matter jurisdiction, you're not contending that every such order is immediately appealable, are you?
No, not every order, Your Honor. And to the point of whether or not it's a final appealable order, I believe it is, Your Honors, because this is a juvenile court matter, and for it to be a final appealable order, there has to be a special proceeding and a substantial right affected. And
so what's the substantial right that was affected?
The state has a substantial right to an adjudication, and in this case, an adjudication did occur. There was an adjudication that was heard in front of a juvenile court judge, and the order from January 25th, 2018 found that the juvenile pled no contest to a disturbing the peace charge, and that court found that the juvenile was a juvenile pursuant to statute 43247, and at that point of time an adjudication had occurred.
Is there anything precluding the state to seek an adjudication?
At this point of time, no, Your Honor, the state can proceed if this court does not find it in my favor. But the point is, the state already did a successful adjudication, and yet another juvenile court judge who went for the continued disposition vacated the adjudication order. Now, the fact is, the juvenile court judge at the disposition hearing who vacated the adjudication order did not have subject matter jurisdiction to do so. Now, juvenile court...
So, expand on that. So, the second order from which you appeal, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's whether or not you would agree with the substance of it, and evidently you disagree with the substance of it, you're saying that court had no authority to take up that issue?
Yes, Your Honor. So juvenile court does...
Is that based on a statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what statute is that?
So first, juvenile court has the ability to vacate orders pursuant to statute 43-2106.02. That statute states that the juvenile court procedures for vacating the order is the same as the district court procedures, which is statute 25-2001. And in that statute, it lists out the several different reasons when a court can vacate its order.
Well, the 25-2001 does a couple of things. It statutorily ratifies the inherent power of a district court, which would exist without that statute at all. And then it talks about extending the time after term for the same authority, and then it also talks about what happens after term and after that extended period of time, all of which depends upon in term or after term. Is there any statute, rule, or order in the separate juvenile court that establishes what a term of court is for a separate juvenile court, or specifically the separate juvenile court for Douglas County?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, but I can file a subsequent brief on that issue. But the point to take note is here is statute 25-2001 is what the juvenile court judge in the order vacating the adjudication order relied on. Specifically, the first element or count in which the juvenile court stated that pursuant to a mistake, neglect, or omission of the clerk, a juvenile court judge can vacate an order. But as we know, that statute specifically talks about mistake, neglect, or omission by the clerk, not a mistake, neglect, or omission by one judge's opinion about another judge making a judgment of law. In this case, we have a juvenile court judge who's using that statute meant to correct mistakes of the clerk to correct a mistake, which I don't believe is a mistake, but in that judge's eyes, a mistake of law based on another juvenile court judge.
Do you agree with the proposition that 25-201 parens 1 would, if applied to the juvenile court, give the juvenile court inherent power to vacate or modify during a term?
Yes.
Is that what it did?
Yes, except it went beyond that statute. Because while it did vacate or modify an order, it didn't do so.
Did it do so during a term?
Because I don't believe the juvenile court statutes discuss the matter of whether when a term ends or starts, I don't have an answer for you, Your Honor. But the point is we can't have the juvenile court judges use this statute, misconstrue it to apply, and essentially act as an appellate court against decisions of their other juvenile court judges in cases.
But it's the same case, is it not?
It is the same case, okay. Yes.
I beg your pardon.
That's fine. In the district court for Douglas County, there's a rule that establishes the term of court as the calendar year, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And here, the action, both the order, well, the adjudication and the order undoing the adjudication both occurred in the same calendar year, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't the inherent power that a district court has, which at least arguably is conferred upon a separate juvenile court by the very statute that you've cited to us, uphold that action?
Because the inherent power of the court is to correct certain mistakes of the clerk, not mistakes that they believe another judge made on the other judge's judgment of law. Essentially, what's happening in this case is the juvenile court judge is using that inherent power, expanding on that statute to include the fact that one judge at the same level can vacate another judge's order, specifically an adjudication order.
Do you have any authority in the district court context that the inherent power of a district court to vacate or modify its own judgments extends only to irregularities or mistakes of the clerk and not to mistakes of the law that the court itself has previously made?
Yes, Your Honor. In the case of Brownlee versus Davidson, this court looked at the words mistake, omission, and neglect and related it to that of the clerk. And
but that's after term. I'm talking about the inherent power of a district court to correct its own mistakes, which we are assuming by virtue of this statute that a separate juvenile court has. That inherent power is essentially plenary, isn't it?
Yes, to correct certain mistakes. And I would argue that a judgment of law is not a mistake that's an inherent power to district court or juvenile court judges.
Well, is your real problem here that you had two judges handling the same case at different times, and one judge had a different opinion of what could be done than the other?
Your Honor, I don't believe that's a problem, because, Your Honor, it seems I'm out of time. May I finish answering your question?
You may finish your thought.
Because when we look at, it's not a matter of two judges hearing the case, it's about juvenile court hearing the case. Now, the juvenile court adjudicated the case and went to disposition on that same case. And then months later, the juvenile court came back and vacated that order. After a disposition had occurred, after dispositional orders had already been carried out. And to that end, Your Honor, I would ask this court to find that that March 27th order is vague, thus rendering the juvenile court not having subject matter jurisdiction to vacate the order and remand this case back for further disposition.
Well, before you sit down, what's your argument about why this matter, if you wish to challenge it, why you didn't have to challenge it in the district court?
Your Honor, typically in a type of case like this, the challenge would have been done in the district court. The statute does state that when it's a county attorney appealing, it's a delinquency matter, and when there's legal jeopardy, the state does have to appeal to the district court. In this case, it's an appeal done from the Douglas County separate juvenile court, which sits at the same level of the district court. And essentially, what would happen is we would come back to the same opinion or the same question is whether or not it's a void order. So
what do you mean it sits at the same level as the district court?
Well, the separate juvenile court is treated as a district court. They have the same inherent powers, and the laws dictate that they have a lot of similarities. But the question still leads to whichever court heard or hears the appeal is the appellate courts have jurisdiction because there's a lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
Had jeopardy attached in this kind of a case? Can it ever attach in this kind of case?
Yes, Your Honor. So it's not double jeopardy, but legal jeopardy. And case law has stated that legal jeopardy is when the trial court has heard some sort of evidence on the guilt of the juvenile or defendant.
By virtue of a so-called plea?
Yes, Your Honor.
But does that just circle back to whether or not there's a plea for juveniles? Don't they answer?
Yes, Your Honor, which is why we have to look at everything in the whole. There is a plea in this case. The juvenile pled no contest. And I do believe juveniles can plea no contest.
What's the statutory basis for that proposition?
So we look at Statute 43-279. Now, subsection 2 states a juvenile can either deny or stand mute. And stand mute in this juvenile context, unlike in criminal court, cannot mean not guilty or denial, because that would make the statute redundant. Within that same subsection, it does allow or orders the juvenile court to then hear evidence of guilt and whether or not that juvenile is a juvenile described in section 43-247.
So you're expanding under 43-279 the language of the statute, am I right? Under one is admission.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's not this.
Correct.
And under sub 2, it's denial.
Yes.
Is that what happened here?
Not a denial, but a no contest plea. I believe
so
that
it's not, the statute doesn't use the phrase no contest when it comes to a child who's been alleged to have done something under sub 1.
That's
like
correct.
Like a law violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So what's the basis that no contest, which does not appear in the statute, is okay?
Well, it wouldn't appear in the statute because juvenile court does not use the same terminology as the district or county courts. For example, not guilty in juvenile...
Well, elsewhere in the juvenile statute, no contest does appear.
I'm sorry, I...
Elsewhere in the juvenile statutes, no contest does appear.
I don't believe it does, Your Honor.
So, under 279.013, the parent can assert admission, denial, or no contest.
Yes, in okay, our...
So that's a juvenile statute, and the phrase no contest appears in the juvenile statute. Do we agree on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
So somehow, evidently, or perhaps the legislature decided not to use no contest when it came to the circumstance where the speaker is the juvenile herself or himself.
Yes and no. 27201.3 applies to the parents of juveniles under a 3A docket, but the controlling matter and delinquencies is 243-247. And in that specific statute, we have to look at what the phrase stand mute means. And in the context, I now understand in the criminal matters, stand mute means not guilty.
Well, just in the ordinary vernacular, doesn't stand mute mean not say anything at all?
Yes, it does, but and if we...
Someone who pleads no contest isn't standing there saying nothing at all, are they?
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct in that matter, but if we look at the statute as a whole within the rest of the subsection, a juvenile can either deny or stand mute. So standing mute is an active effort the juvenile is doing. So the juvenile would stand mute and the court would then hear evidence as to whether or not the juvenile is a juvenile as described in 43-247. And we have to look at the legislative intent of the whole juvenile code, which is for the purpose of promoting the best interests of the juvenile. And I would say this goes, it's similar to the case of In Re Interest Lawrence S. In that case, two juveniles pled no contest to criminal mischief, but they appealed on the grounds of their restitution being excessive. And in that case, this court stated that such an order would give rise to frustration that would negate the juvenile code's rehabilitative purpose. The result of such an order would not be rehabilitation, rather it would give the juvenile a sense of unfairness, injustice towards the system, and that's something we cannot do in the juvenile code. We have to look at the statute 43-249 in a way where it would allow juvenile court protect the best interests of juveniles. What we're saying is if juveniles cannot plead no contest, we're giving adults more protections than we're giving to juveniles, which is contrary to what were the purpose of the juvenile code.
The parents under 279-013, they could be exposed to criminal action, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
At the adult level.
Yes,
no
Your
doubt,
Honor.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
But there's nothing protecting juveniles or the juvenile's parents for the juvenile's actions under delinquency dockets. And because of such, we have to look at the entire juvenile code in a way where it promotes the best interests of juveniles.
And you think that would be done by importing more criminal jurisprudence into the juvenile code?
Essentially, yes, Your Honor. Allowing juveniles to plead no contest would serve in the best interests of juveniles. And with that, Your Honor, I submit my briefs and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. I don't believe we have an appellee, so we will go on to the next case of the day. Is Mr. Smith here today? Mr. Scott Smith,